Why don't we start by you? Go ahead.
I wanted to add on my director of communications. I just want to have her come online.
Okay.
Please hold on just a moment. Let me just get her online.
Okay.
Thank you. Hello?
Hello?
Chrissy?
Yep, I'm on.
Okay, how does it sound?
Everything sounds fine.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Take care.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Why don't we start by each of you introducing yourselves and, you know, your titles, so we just have that on the tape.
Okay. I'm Elizabeth Williams, and I am the Director of Programming Strategies for the National Office for the National Conference for Community and Justice.
Okay.
And I am Chrissy Reyes, and I'm the Communications and Marketing Associate for NCCJ.
Oh, nice to meet you too, Chrissy.
Hi.
I know we've shared some emails, so
yes.
Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Okay, and you both have the interview questions in front of you?
I do, yes.
Right, Liz does. I'm just going to be really listening.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, okay, Elizabeth. Tell me about the nature of the social problem on which, or problems on which NCCJ works.
We, NCCJ is focused on working on issues of oppression. And it's oppression based on race, age, gender, religion, sexual orientation. We look at appearance. We look at gender issues. That's the nature of our work. We're looking at how people are being oppressed based on those social identities. And we look at ways in which we can allow people to better understand how these things manifest in day-to-day life, how behaviors and attitudes perpetuate stereotypes, and ways in which we can look at dismantling those forms of oppression.
Okay. When you focus on, for example, the last thing you said was dismantling those forms of oppression,
mm-hmm.
how do you go about that work?
What we do is we, for many years, have been focused on bringing people together across cultural lines in a place of respect and understanding. So we kind of bring people to neutral grounds and talk about how you can effectively communicate what you're feeling, what your issues are, and how you can listen and seek understanding and not be engaged in constant debate. So NCCJ really focuses on creating environments that are safe and comfortable for people to say things that may be challenging or they may not ever have the opportunity to say anywhere else and feel embarrassed or ashamed. So our first step is really creating a safe environment in which people can talk about these things that are often taboo. And they are often afraid to talk about because of what people might think of them and might say. So that's the first step, is to really create a safe space in which people can talk about these issues. Then we look at ways in which, and information that is important to understand these issues, whether it's historical things, whether it's events that are occurring, public policy issues that are taking place. We look at what information is important in terms of definitions, including defining what things are. And then we look at how do you deal with these things once you've gotten all this information, and it may not be aligned with what you were taught as a child. It may not be in line with what you learned in school. It may not even be in line with what your parents taught you or what even your faith community taught you. So how do you deal with that conflict, and how can you create allies to talk about these things? And that's the next step. And then we look at what leadership skills are needed, what cultural competency skills are needed to really be effective in being a change agent or continuing to do self-reflection to really make sure that you're not contributing to or you are in some way helping to dismantle those forms of oppression. That's kind of the
okay.
We take.
When you get to that last step that you mentioned, what leadership and cultural competencies are necessary to be a change agent and to do self-reflection, could you talk a little bit about those and what you do with them? I mean, are you doing training or when you get to that last step, if you could talk more about the sorts of things you do within it.
Well, when we talk about dismantling these types of issues, it's not just a final step. It's not just one step. It's a series of things. And the whole idea of self-reflection and training, skill buildings, we do a combination of many things. It's not just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
We provide people with kind of assessment tools and things that they can, you know, question themselves about. We look at training, like how to be a good facilitator. How can you then be a leader and engaging people in conversations around this work? How to listen for understanding versus, you know, being someone who, you know, is waiting to do your rebuttal
mm-hmm.
before you clearly hear what someone's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of putting into practice those things which are helpful and really getting to these issues and making sure that people are not stuck and can and move beyond, you know, simply being in conversation and just focusing on what do we do next. It's giving people those actual tools that they can do that.
Okay. So what I'm thinking is maybe we can make it even more concrete by focusing on a particular partnership or campaign or thing. Maybe bringing in, you know, one of the other questions is about a success story that you might be particularly proud of.
Well, you know, just recently, a lot of what we do, NCCJ focuses on a wide range of folks. We're not a single constituency group.
Mm-hmm.
And so our work does cross the gamut of many different age groups, many different audiences, and it speaks to the issues of many different groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so just recently, and I do have a hard copy of an article from one of our youth programs, we have a series of youth programs that we do. We do day-long conferences.
Uh-huh.
We do workshops. We do seminars. We go into the classroom. We do weekend retreats. We do week-long retreats.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular instance is a week-long retreat in which we had some young people come together and struggle with these issues. And I'll send you a copy of the article, and it's about how they have looked at these issues and challenged themselves to think differently about stereotypes, think differently about the way they treat one another, and how they will go then to their classrooms and to their schools and begin to try to challenge the schools and change the school environments to make them more aware of these issues and more sensitive to them to create, you know, a more safe place for people to value and respect differences. So I'll make sure that I can send you that. And it's a very good article, and it's very detailed. It was in the news on September 25th. It was actually posted this week.
Oh, and is that on your website?
It's not up on the website yet, but I have a copy that I will fax to you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Or it will be up on the website, I believe. I was told by end of the day, Monday, beginning Tuesday.
Oh, great. But I can give you my fax number, too. It's 803-735-3112.
Mm-hmm. 3112?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Okay, now let me just, that sort of effort, you know, when you introduced it, you talked about, you know, that you're running a gamut here, so that, for example, I presume that you're talking about it, not just about one type of stereotype, but racial stereotypes and gender stereotypes and sexual orientation stereotypes, et cetera. Is that right?
That's correct.
When you deal with that gamut, do you always find it most effective to deal with the whole range with the group, or are there specific times where you get involved in something that's just focused on race or gender or sexual orientation?
What I've found is that when we do focus sometimes on single issues. However, but what we discovered in our work is that it's easier to introduce the fabric of these oppressions and how they're intertwined and how you experience them at various levels in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And because it gives people a better understanding of how things are, how they're interconnected. So when you talk about age, if you live long enough,
mm-hmm.
and you experience that on some level. the right. You know, oppression around aid.
Right.
So people can understand that a little bit more, and it's more relevant to their own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes when you stick to single issues, if it's not your issue, then you're people tend to be less likely to say, well, I don't have that problem. I don't have to deal with that, or my problem. People tend to try to put a hierarchy on
right.
these issues. And uh-huh. so to avoid establishing a hierarchy, we talk about the fabric and how they're all intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has been a most effective approach for us
mm-hmm.
In our work. Because people can then see themselves and their multiple social identities and how oppression influences their lives.
Okay. So if you work with a group of people in a given community or of a given age group, like you did with the week-long retreat, how do you measure the effectiveness of your work? What do you look for the participants doing with it?
Well, one of the things that we look for is that first initial, that initial response to what they've learned. We do pre- and post-surveys, and we also do daily evaluations throughout some of these programs. And so if we're providing some new information or providing educational experiences for folks, at the end of the day, we want to know, did you learn something that you didn't learn before? And we ask those types of questions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one measurement.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that we do is often ask people to commit themselves back to the program and help train others. So they learn their skills, and then they use them to continue to help others.
Mm-hmm.
So they give back to the program and then become supporters and volunteers in a number of ways with the organization.
Okay. Let me go one step further with that and use what you said before about the youth retreat as an example. You said that that they're in the process of this retreat. They're challenging themselves and also looking at how they can go back to their schools and challenge their school environment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you track that at all? What suppose you have 100 youth in this program and 10 of them do. Commit themselves to working with NCCJ as a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
But the other 90 are also going back to their schools. Do you have any way of knowing what they do with the learning that they've gotten?
Yes, actually, there are a couple of strategies that we've developed to kind of do that.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been over, some recent years, and we're still in the process of testing them out to making sure they're effective. But what we do now is we don't bring people necessarily to the camps solo. Like, they come with a group of support, either a teacher or a faculty person plus two other students. So they're not, left to re-enter into their school
mm-hmm.
environments by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They have support in which they can go back and do things.
Right.
So you have buy-in from different levels of the institution. We do that with adults and with business folks, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way that we make sure on the front end that we are going to prepare them and engage them
mm-hmm.
so that by the end of the program they'll have a chance to do the work.
Right.
And then following the program, we have follow-up programs, whether it's a youth council or they have monthly meetings where they come back and self-report what has taken place. And NCCJ, we have program staff that stay connected to these schools and follow up with them and support them in their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we do our tracking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How much of your work would be with youth? You also mentioned businesses. Do you have a primary focus on a given set of institutional environment to affect?
Well, NCCJ is a very unique organization in that we have regional offices in about 32 states across the country, and we do develop our programming strategies to suit and meet the needs of our communities. So depending on the makeup of the community, that kind of drives the audiences of which we target primarily.
Uh-huh.
So if, for example, I'll take my lovely hometown, Orlando. Oftentimes there is, that's a family town. So
mm-hmm.
there may be more programming focused on young people and youth
mm-hmm.
because that's, a large audience. They have one of the largest school districts in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in a metropolitan city like New York, Your sole focus may not be on youth work, but it also will include faith, traditions, business, and corporations. And so that's kind of how the gamut of our work does. But overall, as an organization, we do quite a bit of work with young people. More work with young people than we do with adults, but it's marginal. It's not that drastically different.
Mm-hmm.
But it also just depends on the regional location and what their audiences are.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get involved with some of these groups? Say I go through your program. I'm working for, say I work for a school and you're dealing with the teachers as well as the youth. And in my community, there ends up being a major issue that comes up and the town and the school district is really torn by it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, presumably I have some better ideas of how I might handle this because I've been through these workshops that you've done. But I may not think that I'm sufficiently prepared to deal with this issue that's sort of broiling up. Do you do anything in terms of follow-up in terms of that, on particular conflicts that arise in a community?
It's so interesting because a lot of our work does stem from that, because oftentimes what you'll find is that NCCJ is looked to as the organization to kind of contact if you got some problems going on around these types of issues.
Uh-huh.
Because they understand the work and how we go about creating a safe environment to have discussions. So we do respond to a lot of things that happen in community issues, whether it's in a school environment. We often respond to places of business where they're looking at some incidents that are current. They want to address them, want to not allow them to happen again, or they read about something, they want to be proactive. So we do get a lot of different calls on that. In fact, in my experience, I work with the media in many cases, and they'll call NCCJ when there's a hot topic going on and within the community, they want to just voice it out and have some, someone to talk to on the air to kind of give people insight on where to go and things like that. So we do respond to those types of calls and those inquiries. And sometimes it's not someone who's connected with our work. Sometimes those calls we get are the first connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example. We had a region that was working on a series of dialogues that were focusing on different topics over the course of a few months. And a person from a county in which the region did not service heard about it, drove about 2 or 3 hours, and said, I heard about this. I wanted to participate because we have some things going on in my school, and I need to get help. It was a concerned parent.
Mm-hmm.
And then NCCJ began to support and stay in communication with this parent and ultimately went to their school district and began to do work with their school districts to help them change policies, make sure that young people had opportunity to discuss these issues through a day-long conference, and they had, work with the association that was their bullying entity, and they talked about bullying and name-calling and things of that nature, and maintained a partnership with that agency.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of continue to work. So it does happen that way.
Right. Now, when you mentioned both, in that particular case, both the dialogues and also something that we haven't touched on too much, which is changing policy.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you get involved in that sorts of thing, what sort of procedures do you use to help people with efforts to change policy?
We have a public policy unit that is based in Washington, D.C., that constantly reviews some of the issues that are relevant to our work and our mission. And we have many regional offices that have public policy people on their boards, and they are connected to their local elected officials. They look at issues together collectively. They form task groups to address these issues, and then they speak out on the issues. They align themselves with other agencies that are concerned about these issues and work together collectively. That's kind of how it happens on many levels. It doesn't always require a partnership, but NCCJ also develops relationships with elected officials, and we make sure that they are informed on what, some of the issues are, what the concerns are, that we are aware of, and keep them well informed, and they become our allies. And so it may not take a group, but it just takes NCCJ having a concentrated effort to establish relationships with people
okay.
within their communities.
Okay.
So there's two ways.
We've been really talking a lot about the second question, how NCCJ does its work. Is there anything you want to lift up that you think is particularly unique about how you go about doing the work, or how you make it effective?
I think one of the things that really jumps out at me, and it's being NCCJ is an old organization. In fact, we're celebrating 75 years of doing this type of work. And we started at a time which it was unheard of during the 1927 to bring people of different races together, and oftentimes of different faith backgrounds, to talk about issues of race, issues of inequity. And NCCJ has always been bold in doing that, and we have a rich history of that. But I think what makes us unique from many other organizations is that we really focus on so much the human relations component of our of really getting people to see one another, and not for the stereotypes that they have, and not for the images that have been placed in the media, but really setting aside those things in order to see a person as a human being, and then not as a human being first, with all those other things that are attached to it. So we don't deny people their desire to really hold on to their cultures and be proud of it. We create a place where they can come and bring all of that to the table in a way that is nurturing, and we consider that an asset and not such a liability. And oftentimes people, when you look at diversity, they say diversity is divisive because, you know, you're all so different. But we look at diversity as being so much of an asset and a richness that only enhances the quality of life. And so I think that approach to the work, it has been a strong thrust for us as an organization in many ways. And we don't align ourselves as a single constituency. You have your urban leagues, you have your ADLs, you have, you know, La Raza, you have other agencies, but they're focused on that community's issues. And NCCJ says we care about everyone's issues. We can't be everything to everyone, but we do have a sensitivity to everyone's issues.
Right.
And want to make sure that everyone has equal funding and comes to the table and have equal opportunity to talk about them.
Right. In terms of, you know, what when you started talking about the long history of NCCJ, it occurred to me that NCCJ used to have a different name. And could you tell me a little bit about what prompted the name change?
Well, NCCJ, the National Conference of Christians and Jews, actually, we had several name changes.
That was the only one I knew about.
Right, and that was not even our original name. So over the course of the organization, we've had several name changes. The National Conference of Christians and Jews is the one we had the longest. And I guess at the time got the most name recognition. And it did so, rightfully so, because at the time in which we were organized, the religious makeup of this country was basically Christians and Jews.
Right.
And so it was very appropriate given what we were looking at as a country.
Right.
As we as a country have changed in our demographics, not just in ethnicity and in faith, but in many other ways have changed drastically, economic levels, educational opportunities, and that change. And we are often looked to as an organization that was just based on faith issues because of the name. And people often thought we were just a religious organization, or we only focused on Christian issues or Jewish issues. And we needed to have a name that spoke more to what we were trying to do, and it was really about building community and looking at justice issues and social equality and bringing to the table those things that needed to take place in order for people to be valued and respected. So that is what prompted the name change.
Right.
We kept the acronym NCCJ because it has such a rich history.
Right.
The name was to speak more to the work that we're doing and speak to more of inclusion.
Okay. When was that? You know,
I believe it was 1998, 99?
96.
96, I'm sorry.
That's great.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm confusing it. We actually, as Elizabeth was saying, we went through a few changes. The first one I think she was referring to is when NCCJ was established in 27. It was the National Conference for Christians and Jews in the name of, what was it, Amnesty, Brotherhood, and Peace. something really long like that.
Wow, yeah.
But around 95, 96, it was shortened to the National Conference, and right away they realized that that was not, that also wasn't, you know, giving people the full sense of the work we did, and they wanted to maintain the acronym. So then it was changed in about 98 to For Community and Justice.
Oh, okay.
So I was right.
So. You were.
I
was feeling very out of it, having not known. I was still calling it National Conference of Christians and Jews. So I'm glad I've only been doing that for 5 years as opposed to 15 or something.
Well, I entered the organization at a very interesting time because I've been with the NCCJ for 8 years, and I entered during the National Conference era.
Uh-huh.
And I got the question of what.
Right.
And so, you know, I was like, wow.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Are there any other successes or achievements that you'd like to mention as part of this interview?
We have really been able to have some align ourselves with some very good partnerships, and we're excited about the work that we've done around public policy issues. We've done a huge effort and initiative with our mascot issues, NCCJ, and in some of our regions. We've done effective public policy work with some legislative changes over the past few years, and we're really excited about our new direction and new vision. As an organization, we have focused our work a little bit more in looking at institutional change.
Mm-hmm.
and systemic oppression, and we have been able to engage leaders in decision-making positions to really focus on having a stronger impact, and that has been a very good direction for us as an organization, and I think that was a success, because as times change and the needs of us and the needs of our society have changed, we have changed as well. So I think that being able to stay current with the issues and make the proper adjustments in our training and development and the way that we do work, but still staying true to our mission and not straying away, I think is a tremendous success for an organization as old as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that in 1927, what we were hot on and what we were concerned about and equity in education and making sure that people of different faith groups had opportunities to do the same things that other groups had, I mean, hanging on to that and really seeing the richness in that and maintaining that over these years, I think is a tremendous success as an organization.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think failures is a hard word to talk about? We're talking about learnings, I guess.
Learnings?
Any things that backfired or didn't go the way you'd want them to that caused NCCJ to change something about the way it does its work?
Well, I can tell you the name change was huge. And I think that our whole strategic focus was a big challenge for us as an organization, because, you know, for oftentimes NCCJ, because we were about everyone,
mm-hmm.
and still are about everyone, but we just weren't clear about what we wanted to do for everyone, and that focus wasn't as clear, we had a challenge. Because we had, we often took the place of the honest broker, saying, "Okay, well, we sit straddle the fence." And at one point, that's how we were known. That, you know, NCCJ is a neutral organization, and so you can work with them because they're neutral. But our mission statement is value laden. I mean, you know, we are against bias and bigotry. We are for promoting advocacy and respect and understanding.
Uh-huh.
And so that was a challenge for us.
Okay.
And so that was a big, huge learning
mm-hmm.
for the organization,
mm-hmm.
is that we could not be the honest broker or the neutral organization. We had to speak out and be more vocal in a way that people understood it and not look to us as, you know, this neutral organization, because we want to think about systemic changes. We want to fight oppression. We want to look at these issues in a way that we want to bring about change.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we don't just want to talk about it. We want to take action, because we are so strong mm-hmm. and building strong dialogue and getting people at the table to talk, and we wanted to be more effective in taking action. And so that has been a large learning curve for us as an organization, and
mm-hmm.
just really being able to track the action and kind of develop the process of, you know, once people hear and talk and discuss, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was
mm-hmm.
a huge learning curve, and what you see now is us really focusing on, as an organization, how do we help prepare people for what's next?
Okay.
So I think that was a huge challenge in learning for us.
Around when did that sort of shift begin to take place, away from the honest broker neutral to, you know, sort of a more advocacy role?
I think that it happened maybe about 13, 14 years ago.
Uh-huh. Okay. So around the late 80s, beginning of the 90s?
Mm-hmm. And it had to do with changes in leadership of the organization and the changes in our society and things that were happening and occurring. During the Civil Rights era, NCCJ was very instrumental in supporting the initiatives that were going on.
Right.
But people didn't know. It wasn't as open and vocal as we're trying to be nowadays.
Right.
So we were always active and doing things, but it wasn't in a way that people knew about it.
Right.
And so I think that has been a change. So in the past, and with our new leadership from our president and CEO, Sandy Sanford Cloud, Jr., he really brought to this organization a whole new way of doing business and looking at this work.
Mm-hmm.
He is our first African American president in 75 years
wow.
of this organization, and he brought to the table. He was not from the faith community necessarily. He had not been in nonprofit management. He came from the business world,
mm-hmm.
and so he brought to this organization a whole new sense of direction, accountability, and leadership. That really helped us move forward over the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been here with us for, I think, approximately 10, almost 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
So leadership has played a critical role
right.
in shaping and molding the organization
right.
and moving us forward.
I would also add, Elizabeth, when you're talking about Sandy's leadership, but as even though he was a business leader, he did have a degree in theology. And interestingly enough, he had been a senator in Connecticut.
Oh.
So he had the sort of rich background and expertise.
That's an interesting combination background.
Mm-hmm, that really fit our unique, you know, mission statement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it sounds, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess what I start thinking about in terms of the timing of that shift is that with a lot of, you know, sort of unified leadership during the civil rights movement with the Southern Christian Leadership Council and CORE, that playing the role of that what the movement might have needed was groups that could play honest broker roles.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But as the movement sort of broke up and, you know, dissipated and has a lot of different foci and a lot of different organizations and different leadership and different goals, the need asserts itself for sort of a broad-based approach that's advocating rather than providing neutral, you know, brokerage services to large-scale organizations that don't exist, in a sense.
I think you have captured I think the essence of it, because what I gather from it as well is that we had a certain role that we had to play during the different things based on what we were dealing with and the
right.
issues at hand.
Right.
As times changed, yes, we needed to be more advocacy oriented and focused because we were dealing with different times. Absolutely, you're right.
Right. Yeah, and I didn't mean so much that there weren't other large-scale organizations.
Right.
There's not, you don't talk about 2003 as the civil rights movement era.
Right.
You know, whereas during that time there was, and the things I've read about NCJ mostly have to do with it brokering ways for leaders in the movement to have a place to negotiate something with a, you know, with a city administration or with whomever the concern was.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's part of why I was getting that impression, too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. In terms of, I know you said you would send me the article about the youth retreat.
I have, I have a ton of articles here that I want to send over to you that capture some things recently that are it speaks to different things: interfaith, business, community building, different aspects of our work, and there are articles I would love to share with you. Is that okay?
That's great.
Okay.
Sure. Sure. That was what I was going to ask, was whether there were other things you'd like me to take a look at and try to include some elements of it in this.
Mm-hmm.
And what my thought is that maybe I'll have a couple of follow-up questions after I read some of that material. There might be a particular, a particular case, for example, where I say, wow, how did this come about?
Mm-hmm.
And, and sort of want to get a little bit more information on it. So would it be okay if I call you back if that happens?
Sure.
Are there other groups that you feel are doing, we're sort of near, we're at the end of this part of the project, but I'm hoping that it's followed up on. And let me tell you a little bit about the context of one of the reasons for my interest in that. My own background is in conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I find somewhat limiting about the literature on conflict resolution is the tendency to which it, in many cases, shies away from looking at systemic conflict as opposed to, individual or specified groups of people,
mm-hmm.
fighting against
mm-hmm.
each other. And the second is when it does deal with what the field calls intractable conflicts, deep-rooted social conflicts,
mm-hmm.
It tends to focus over there. Let's talk about the Middle East, or let's talk about Northern Ireland, or let's talk about South Africa. Let's not talk about Washington, D.C., or Columbia, South Carolina, or New York.
Mm-hmm.
And also, very often, what is interested in conflicts that have social conflicts where there's large-scale physical violence present, and not, from my point of view, not looking enough at structural violence, at,
mm-hmm.
At ways that injustice limits people's life expectancies and life opportunities,
mm-hmm.
Although it may not put a bullet through their head. And so what I'm, because of that focus over there, it's not necessarily looking very closely at what, sort of creative approaches have been developed domestically dealing with issues like racism and sexism and heterosexism. And so I'm really trying to get a sense, particularly in terms of processes and techniques, what are people doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, this is a long way of describing that if I read an article and I'm looking at, having gotten to a new agreement, for example,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes articles don't specify what sort of method was used to get to that new agreement. So that's the sort of question I'm most likely to have some follow-up on.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are there any other groups you feel that are doing important, effective, and innovative work on the same issues that you work on? Now, let me preface this by saying that I doubt that in this phase of the project we'll be getting in touch with anybody else, but I'm hoping that we'll be able to follow up on it, having used this as a way of sort of framing some of our questions better.
You know, we actually, our research department, we produce a directory of organizations that are focused on our work.
Good.
And I would love to send that to you.
That'd be great.
If you would give me your address, and I'll send it to you, because I think that would be most helpful than me trying to think off the top of my head.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, because we've outlined some promising practices in there and everything, so I think that would be more helpful for you.
Okay.